Welcome to Walter Edgar's Journal. With me in the studio today are Commissioner of Agriculture Hugh Weathers and Sumter County farmer Nat Bradford. We're going to talk about the introduction of a new crop into South Carolina, at least new in the 21st century, and that is hemp. So first of all, gentlemen, welcome to the Journal.
Thank you, Walter.
Appreciate it.
When you say hemp, people immediately think about illegal substances. But Hugh, I know that there is a biological difference, but you want to explain to our folks?
Well, industrial hemp is, let's call it a third cousin to marijuana. They're both in the cannabis family. The difference is with industrial hemp, I'll say it one time and then we'll use the abbreviation, but the tetrahydrocannabinoid, THC, in industrial hemp is much lower than that in marijuana. That is the hallucinogenic component, if you will, of cannabis. With the state law that was passed and operating under the federal law changed in 2014, the maximum amount you can have is a 0.3 THC, and that's a critical number. So again, both in the same family, but much different based on that level of THC in the cannabis.
Actually, cotton's in the same family too, isn't it?
I think it is.
Yeah. Going way back into history, gentlemen, in the 18th century, hemp was grown in South Carolina for the production of rope.
Fibers. Yeah, rope.
Fibers over in the Welch Neck and in the upcountry by yeoman farmers. It was not a major cash crop like rice or indigo or later cotton,
right.
But it was an exportable product, you know, with a colony that depends upon shipping and trade. And there were rope walks in Charleston to use local hemp.
Yeah, I think they made rope for the King's Navy, didn't they?
Way back when. And there was actually an English organization called the Royal Society for the Promotion of Art and Manufacturing that paid a bounty to South Carolinians who produced the best hemp. It was like winning the Blue Ribbon at the State Fair, except it was a nice cash prize. So with what's going on now in South Carolina and in other parts of the country, farmers are looking for a crop that they can grow that is profitable, and we need it in this country. We import millions of dollars worth of hemp for manufacturing right now. Nat, I know you've been dealing with historic plants and you've got your great watermelon. How did you get into deciding to try hemp?
You know, it goes back for me about to my college years, 25 or so years, just really loving plants, growing up in plants, and learning about hemp and its illegalization. This was in college, and I just look at these plants. Hemp was one of those that just had so much to offer, and it had so many different variations. It was a plant that I just felt compelled that when the opportunity came in South Carolina, I wanted to be in line to grow it. Didn't know it was going to be 25 years or so before that happened. And its uses have changed so much. You know, growing it in South Carolina 85 years or so ago to now, you know, CBD wasn't even on the radar in the 1930s. So it's just, we're just starting to reacquaint ourselves with this plant and understanding its new potential. So it's exciting.
All right. Now, it was declared illegal in the United States and in South Carolina, in the 1930s?
30s, I believe.
Yeah. Hugh, when did the state laws, which mirror the federal laws, begin to change?
Well, the first installment, I think, was in 2014 when we changed the law allowing CBD to be sold and used in South Carolina for medicinal purposes. There was a young man whose parents pushed that initiative, and Governor Haley subsequently signed it. So that sort of maybe opened the door. And then across the country, several states began to look at bringing back industrial hemp as a crop alternative. Kentucky has been sort of the leading proponent of that. So South Carolina in 2017 passed the law to allow us to get into a pilot project beginning in 2018. And then this will be the second year of our pilot project. And now, moving farther, the federal regulations have changed just recently, and those changes will be effective in 2020. So the opportunity to grow hemp will be opened up even more. It's opened more in 2019 because the governor has signed an amendment to the original law to give us more opportunities for more farmers in 2019.
All right. So it's not just a question of somebody can say, hey, I want to grow hemp. You have to have a license to grow it?
That's correct. You have to pass a background check. You cannot have any felonies in your background. We have to know precisely with latitude and longitude coordinates where you're growing it. You have to allow the authorities to come to your property to do sampling, testing of it, like we were speaking earlier about the THC is very critical. So we need to allow law enforcement to come onto a farm to do the testing so that we know the crop is being grown under the guidelines.
How many acres of hemp do we have growing in the state now under the projects? Because this all comes under your office.
That's right. Well, in 2018, the law was enacted, and it was sort of a phasing it in. So in 2018, we selected 20 growers to receive permits, and they grew a maximum of 20 acres each. So we had nearly 400 acres. For 2019, the original intent was for us to select 40 farmers, and they could grow a maximum of 40 acres. Again, so it would have been 1,600. Well, just recently, we pushed for an amendment of the original law to allow 2019 to give us more opportunities for more farmers. So in 2019, the acreage is unlimited, and we will potentially have 160 growers because those are the farmers who actually applied for a permit. If they all pass a background check, we could have 160. Rather late in the game to make those changes. So it's going to be interesting as we speak to see how many actually apply for a permit.
All right. Nat, you got one of the first permits. Compared to other things you have grown, let's just talk about the process, because it's my understanding and looking at historically where hemp was grown in South Carolina back in the 18th century, you could almost grow it anywhere. It did not require the really good soil that tobacco or cotton or certainly the different soil that rice required.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, Sumter County's got good farmland.
We've got the potential to grow virtually any crop, any annual crop that we'd like to grow, and hemp is one of them as well. One of the challenges that I'd say the biggest challenge that I've faced with it is the genetics that we've lost over the past 80 years or so of not being able to grow it, not being able to maintain germplasm in our seed banks.
All right, let's explain all that for our listeners. When you say you've lost the genetics, mm-hmm. I know that the commission understands that, but I don't.
Okay, so agriculture has been perpetuated through millennia, passing seeds down. That's what really the root of my farm is seeds that have passed down through generations. Well, it's evolved over the last 100 years or so. There's a lot bigger seed companies involved and universities, but historically it's been, you know, a family saving seeds, growing it in a region, and you end up with crops that are in tune with the environment, with the soil, with the locality, the pest pressures, and they're acclimated to that region. When you interrupt that cycle and you don't save those seeds for 80-something years, those seeds lose their viability, and it was illegal to grow them, so the universities could not perpetuate the germplasm or the different types of hemp varieties that would have grown well in South Carolina. We've lost them, so we've really got to start from scratch again. Where are we getting the genetics or the seeds to grow these? They're coming from Northern Europe. which have moved over to Canada, which have trickled down into the Northwest. And we've got to take those seeds and kind of start with the building blocks of getting them acclimated to South Carolina again. And we may not be growing them for the same purposes anymore. So we've got to start breeding programs to select for what the new uses are for hemp moving into the 21st century. So now we're going to see CBD varieties. That's the medicinal purpose of hemp that Commissioner Weathers was talking about. But we're also going to be looking at fiber and grain varieties and their new uses and how they're going to fit into the way agriculture mechanics, harvesting equipment and stuff that we didn't have, you know, 85 or 100 years ago, new equipment, new technology, and these have to be fused together through genetic selection.
There was an interesting article in Forbes just this past December about hemp and what could be produced. Talk about a single acre of hemp replaces 4 acres of trees if you use that fiber to make paper.
Not accurate.
Okay.
It's not. It's getting perpetuated a lot. That's an old piece of data from the 1930s or 20s, I think, with the modern forestry model that we have and the super improved loblolly pines. What I think now is possibly you've got these pine trees that are designated on an acre for 20 to 25 years. If you grew an annual crop on that same acreage for 25 years, you'll have more biomass generated than you would over a one-time crop designated for that period. But they're pulling back. It's a figure from a long, long, long time ago.
Oh, darn.
I wanted to believe it too, but that's pie in the sky.
But Walter, you're mentioning that, and that's one of the things that the department is going to push forward on this year. There's a lot of not necessarily inaccurate information for any particular purpose, but we want our farmers who are considering hemp to have the most accurate information that we can generate for them to make some pretty major decisions, because the cost of growing hemp is considerably higher than corn or soybeans or cotton. So we're going to bring together a group and ask what are the questions we need to know about this crop, about its viability, its genetic base, its offtake. And as we generate that information from credible sources and dispel some information about the astronomical profit opportunities that were really just all over the map. So as we move forward and develop the industry in South Carolina, we think that is an obligation that we have for our potential growers. So again, just I say that because of the information maybe is that you were quoting is now inaccurate. We just want to dispel inaccuracies.
Well, I think that's very important. Why is hemp more expensive to grow than corn or soybeans or cotton?
Well, I'll let the grower tell you. How about that?
My first year, my plan was to grow hemp for grain because it was going to be more in line with my farm model, which is food-based.
Now you say grain, so what do you do?
So the seed is the grain.
I know, but is that consumed?
It's consumable, yep. And what we were going to do was press the seed just like an olive oil press. Press the seeds and extract the edible oil. And we were going to market it as, you know, cold-pressed hemp seed oil. And it fits in with our food-centric model on our farm. That's not as expensive to get into on a commodity crop platform as it is the CBD model. The CBD, again, because the genetics are harder to come by, there's a little bit of a monopoly on the genetics that are available. The prices are really high at the moment.
Art, who has the monopoly on the genetics?
They're mostly coming out of Colorado and the western side of the U.S.
Okay.
Oregon. Maine,
that's right.
The state of Maine. But your seed cost is where the the elevated cost of the crop begin is actually mm-hmm. with the seed that have to be purchased.
And again, we're using CBD. I think we need to re-explain again what we mean by CBD.
And you might want to take this one.
Well, it is the extract. All right, if you have a hemp plant growing, you could harvest it for fiber and take the entire plant. You could harvest it for seed, as Nat was speaking. But if you harvest it for CBD, you're going to take the flowering ends of the stem, and you're going to harvest that, and you're going to dry it. Then you take it to a processor who extracts the hemp, and CBD, cannabinoids, are one of the extracts. I think there are between 25 and 30 extracts of different types that you can get from the flowering part of a hemp plant. That's why it's so versatile. But the one that has the most attention is CBD, and it's used either in salves or direct oil based products. So there are many uses, but CBD is the most commonly referred to now. But the diversity of hemp is tremendous.
So CBD is legal in South Carolina for medicinal purposes?
Correct.
So what you were trying to do for seed was less costly than the people who are trying to do the medicinal? Is that...
Nat's strategy, if he is successful in harvesting seed for carrying on the genetics that best suit the Southeast, that would be a model that would be available to him. If you were to grow it for hemp, mm-hmm. The farming practices are not as intense, and therefore the cost would be lower. Hemp has to be grown organically. So you cannot put pesticides, so your pest controls, your weed control is old style. It's either plowing or hand pulling. Most of the farms, a lot of them grew on black plastic like we grow tomatoes, mm-hmm. White plastic, so that you have a better chance for weed control. While that plant is growing, it's competing for nutrients with the weeds and until it, you know, creates a canopy that it can... hold its own.
Give you an example of the difference in price. So the hemp varieties that have been around, you can buy those grain for planting grain conventionally, using grain drills and things like we use for planting wheat and other crops. Those seeds are running anywhere from about $2 to $7 a pound. And you've got 40,000, potentially 40,000 seeds per pound. The CBD seeds are running anywhere from a dollar to, a couple dollars per seed.
Per seed.
Oh, right. Per seed. And that's why the CBD side is expensive to get into. And if you buy cuttings off of plants, specific plants, clonally, then you're paying sometimes, $5, $10 per plant.
Oh, and gosh. Talk about $10, $8 to $10 a seed. I'm going back to the idea of the original hunter-gatherers turning farmers mm-hmm. and, one precious seed with a dead fish.
Right, right.
And for an acre, that would cost thousands and thousands of dollars.
Well, seed is... your biggest hurdle going in. Clemson, the economists at Clemson are doing the work for us, should have numbers finalized, but the range mm-hmm. of investment per acre, according to their work in South Carolina, was from $8,000 to $13,000 per acre investment costs to put it in. Now, that's depending on if you had the irrigation in place, if you had some of the infrastructure in place. If you started from scratch, which some of our farmers will do, I've seen enterprise budgets at $18,000 per acre investment costs.
What would you pay for enough seed for soybeans or corn on a per acre as compared to?
Well, let's take cotton. All total cost ready to harvest, you're much less than $1,000. You're $600 to $650 for everything. But the value of that cotton harvested at 2 bales per acre is somewhere just north of $1,000. So, again, the reason we're looking at this crop is that we could move the value of production on our farms from the average, if we take all of the farm acreage in South Carolina and we develop an average revenue per acre that our farmers out there generate, we're somewhere around $700 on average of all of our crops. So with hemp, you're potentially in a $20,000 or better per acre value for crops. So it's a different mindset that that's why I'm glad we're sort of taking it slow. We have Clemson doing some research this year and this summer on their 5 research farms around the state, so our farmers will be able to go and see. So again, we're trying to do this the right way to set our farmers up for a chance for success.
All right. Gentlemen, we need to pause for a moment and let our listeners know that this is Walter Edgar's Journal, and I'm talking with Commissioner of Agriculture Hugh Weathers and farmer Nat Bradford about the introduction and growing of hemp in South Carolina. Nat, you were one of 20 farmers who got the license to do 20 acres. How did your 20 acres do?
I scaled way back, and I'm glad I did. If I had gone out with unproven genetics for South Carolina, 20 acres, I could have failed miserably. We did variety trials. We tested about 9 different types, from grain varieties to CBD varieties. And one example, one of the varieties we tested, 7 plants survived out of 36,000 seeds that went in the ground.
Oh.
So if you think, what if I'd planted 20 acres, it would have been catastrophic. The neat thing about these genetics, though, is that those 7 plants that survived have the genetic markers to survive South Carolina. So we've effectively eliminated all the ones that won't do well, and we've saved seed off of the ones that are going to do well. And those become the building blocks. It just doesn't happen overnight.
All right. Hugh, what about the other 19 farmers? Have you got various reports from them?
I visited, I'm thinking, 17 to 18 of the 20. What we did in the first year was try to pick a diversification of location around the state. We tried to pick and diversify our 20 based on long-term, long-time farming. Well, we tried to pick some new to farming. So we worked hard to get a good cross-section in the first year. Bear in mind, we had 130 applications. So to pick those 20 was a tough task. In 2019, we had 160 applications and were charged originally with picking 40. That's why we're glad that we're going to open it up to the additional group. But we saw a variety of farming practices, some on black plastic like a vegetable grower, some not. Some planted flat, not on the raised beds. We saw it in heavy soil, light soil, different varieties, some much taller than, you know, it's 7 and 8 feet tall. We saw some very bushy plants, different varieties. So a good mixture. We're sending out surveys now to the 2018 growers to say, tell us your experiences. Tell us what you missed the mark on, that type of thing, so we can learn and share that information going forward. So a good variety of growers from the PD to the Piedmont. Some in the Midlands, some in the Low Country. So we in our 20 growers, I think we had operations in 16 counties across the state.
People would say government reports wouldn't be interesting, but I think a report of that first year in South Carolina would be incredibly interesting to the general public. And for those of us in terms of history, like I say, I can tell you it was grown in the Welch Neck over there in the PD, and it was other places they just say it was grown up country, but they were really talking about Orangeburg,
uh-huh,
Sumter, Fairfield. I just find this whole thing fascinating, that the focus on agriculture, when so many people say, oh, we got to do this with high-tech this, high-tech that. But actually, in terms of seeds, you are doing high-tech, right?
It is. When you're working with the genetics, and that's one of the things with our, with my family, passing down that knowledge of genetics and how to select, we're kind of at the beginning stages of what hemp is going to look like in South Carolina. We're sort of getting to put our hands in there and create and shape and mold what these plants are going to look like. The worst thing that could happen is that we are stuck in a rut where we're buying our genetics from Colorado and Oregon and other states in perpetuity. We want to have our own genetics right here in South Carolina for South Carolina farmers first and foremost.
Commissioner, that's where Clemson's coming in, is to help develop the seeds that...
With their ability to do research on five farms, you know, spread around the state, we'll be able to see some of the success that they'll have. I want to know exactly what they hope to do in different seed varieties. Don't know that yet, but I just know it'll be valuable information going forward. Our goal in the department has been to try to separate South Carolina from the pack. We are the 38th state to approve industrial hemp. We don't want to be just another state growing industrial hemp all for CBD. I think that has the potential to oversupply that market and some of those values we talked about earlier trending downward, making it a much less profitable alternative. So again, with the research we want to do this year, with our manufacturing base in South Carolina, some of our car manufacturers are importing interior components for cars that have been sprayed with hemp fibers in door liners. Well, we want to investigate how do we create that supply chain here by growing hemp for fiber in South Carolina.
And, of course, fiber could also be used in clothing.
That's correct. Be used in concrete.
Mm-hmm.
Hempcrete is stronger than concrete.
Okay.
That's another show.
No, we'll just talk about hempcrete right now.
Well, again, the fibers in it are sprayed into the concrete mix, much like other aggregates when you want to strengthen your concrete. So spraying it into concrete creates hempcrete. And again, the information tells us, and we want to try to find a research to verify it, makes it a stronger product, lighter weight, and better insulation.
I guess other fiber uses traditionally you think about sacking rope.
That's correct. And that option, again, that's our whole purpose in the next few years, to see which of those options will provide the best alternative for our farmers. Growing it for fiber is totally, Nat's spoken about it, but the maturity of the plant is different for fiber than it is for CBD, and that's a whole nother set of concerns. It's male and female seed. It's how long do you want the female plant to wait before it begins to flower. So if you're growing for CBD, that's your goal. If you're growing for fiber, it's a different set of goals. So as we have these farms develop around the state, we've got to think about, well, how close, literally by miles, is that hemp grower for fiber to this hemp grower for CBD, and can the wind serve as a vector and impact the CBD hemp growers operation?
All right, what about growing season? I mean, we think traditional, we're recording this show in late March, people are already getting their, farmers getting their fields ready, mm-hmm. Depending on where they could put in their cotton or soybeans. When did you plant your hemp crop last year? Nat?
Last year, again, it was a little bit late in the season, but it actually worked out okay. I planted mine in June, and it was plenty enough time with our long growing seasons to mature the plants for seed production. I think it was in October when we harvested. Farmers that planted early, the crop still didn't mature until the fall. And when you have 6 or 7 months of growing season with these varieties that, again, haven't been grown in the southeast heat and humidity, they're coming from arid regions and things. These were kind of tired and worn out plants by the time they got to the fall. So we're figuring out the planting times, the different varieties. Some mature very early. Some are a long season crop. And, you know, some of those things are going to help determine the planting. If you get an early season variety, you might be able to plant early and harvest in the middle of summer. And maybe these longer season crops you plant maybe in June or late May and harvest those in the fall. So we're still, you know, tremendous amounts to learn with the different genetics and the different varieties and growing them for their unique uses.
I find this, it's fascinating. I was thinking back historically to the introduction of indigo into South Carolina. And of course, the Eliza Lucas Pinckney story is true. It is not a myth. And from her first crop, she saved the best seeds, and she continued to do that and then passed them along, which is what you do. But they were eventually able to get two crops a year out of indigo. It was different in Latin America. They got had more rain, so they got sometimes 4 or 5. With your crop, you said you could harvest in summer. Could you plant another one? And are you looking at maybe multiple crops?
I think you have the potential to, for sure. I don't know yet about the rotation. I don't know that you would want to go right behind a hemp crop and plant hemp again. But working out a rotation where maybe one of your earlier crops, or maybe you harvest your corn and you go behind it with hemp, like we do soybeans.
Is hemp cold sensitive? And when you're talking about growing in Colorado, you are talking about some cold temperatures. I just wondered if, again, thinking of experimentation over the years, we tried to grow mahogany trees, Commissioner, back in the 18th century. And they did great until the first frost, and then all this, these beautiful, you know, 6-foot seedlings were gone.
Like some of our attempts with citrus, even though we have citrus growing in South Carolina, not in any great amount. The hemp grown in Colorado is on the eastern plateaus, and at the high elevations. Again, that's what we are hoping for with the work that Clemson's going to do. Tell us some of those answers. How early could we plant it? Obviously, March, you know, or when we're beyond frost. How early could we plant it? Could we do two crops? What would be the net benefit for doing that? So there are varieties that are shorter in duration until maturity than others, just like any other crop. So it's possible. And again, it is a steep learning curve. Everything you're picking up on it, we've been sort of deluged with for the last year to 18 months.
I think it's exciting that your department has been working so intensely with this instead of just, all right, everybody else is growing hemp. We'll just let it be just like everybody else. We've mentioned some uses of hemp. Now when you're producing the oil, is that just like a vegetable oil?
It's a vegetable oil. One of the most relatable things I would say is folks that are taking fish oil supplements rich in omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids, hemp seed oil has all four, the 3, 6, 9, and 12. It's vegetable based, so it really, for those that are in the vegan or vegetarian mindset, it's a great alternative. But it's also used anything that you would want to use a vegetable oil for, the hemp seed oil would be a good use for it.
So I mean, just like canola or corn oil, you could use it in cooking, and it's
salad dressings, you know, finishing
you're
oils.
You're not making mile high brownies.
No, and there's none of the THC or the other cannabinoids in the seed. So even if you saved seeds off of a marijuana plant, it doesn't have THC in the seed itself. It's separate from the other cannabinoids.
The uses in medically oriented, it does great things with inflammation. People take it for, you know, pain and whatnot. My hope, I'd love to see a hemp application somehow impact this opioid overuse and crisis that we have. It would be great to see if, in fact, industrial hemp or CBD somehow has an ability to have a positive impact on that. We haven't gotten into food based CBD. The reason for that, we're waiting on the Food and Drug Administration to give us regulations going forward for CBD infused foods. So a lot of talk that's out there, you can do it on a limited basis, but we at the Department of Agriculture and our regulatory responsibilities, we are following suit with the FDA and telling our potential processors, you can't infuse CBD into pizzas or drinking water or whatnot that some people want to do now until we get the go-ahead from the FDA.
But you can use the whole plant. You can't extract just CBD and add it to a food, but you could take the plant and process the whole plant because it is
hemp. Am I understanding? You can do hemp-based, but not CBD-based.
Okay.
Isolates.
Okay. So you were concentrating on seed and you did oil. You only pressed the seed. What did you do with the rest of the hemp plants that you grew?
So we saved biomass off of it just for the novelty of it, not going to any market. Again, this was small plots for genetic purposes. Didn't sell any of it. We saved the seed. We saved the biomass off of it and just really wanted to learn how the plant works that first year. Going into the second year, take what we learned and apply it. This year's going to be a different ball game, and I don't want to. We're going to be doing some CBD production on our farm this year, but moving forward, the nation has kind of switched its focus to the CBD gold rush. South Carolina needs to stay on track to be ready for grain and fiber when the CBD industry levels out. Okay. So we're going to continue working on the genetics for the grain and fiber industry in South Carolina to be ready.
Okay. All right, Hugh, I saw you nodding agreement with what he was saying about the focus that he and y'all are taking and not jumping on the gold rush.
Well, again, with the number of states who are growing it, and of course, when we read that some of our major drugstore chains are going to have CBD products, there's going to be a supply necessary. I'm hoping that South Carolina's growing advantages of a long growing season, that we can develop potentially double crops and be able to compete on a commodity-based farming. And that's what CBD will become. It'll probably become commodity-based. So, but we just don't want to put all of our CBD oil in one basket. We do want to look at how can we be creative in South Carolina with the research institutions that we have here. How can we take advantage of that with a manufacturing base? How can we separate South Carolina from the pack?
All right. Well, Nat, you said this year things are going to be different. How many acres are you going to plant?
Not set in stone, but we're looking at being involved at least in about 150 acres, potentially 500 acres.
Wow. What have you got growing on those acres now?
Nothing's in the ground yet, but we're going to...
In the past, what have you used that land for? Corn, soybeans, watermelons?
All of the above. There's been conventional acreage. Because I don't have enough land to do that all myself, but we're working with other farmers, adjacent farmers, and farmers in other counties to put this project together this year. And we'll be doing that. I'll be doing some on my organic land where we grow our okra and collards and watermelons and other crops.
All right. Now, in terms of farm machinery, does this require a massive investment like cotton pickers and you know, that kind of thing, these huge machines, or is some of it still done by hand? I mean,
CBD right now brings in a high enough return on your investment that you can afford hand labor to harvest CBD, and you're going to have the gentlest, highest return of cannabinoids with a gentle hand harvest. Although there are manufacturers of equipment out there that can harvest CBD on a grand scale very quickly, right now we're going to do whichever seems to produce the most return on our investment at the back end.
All right. And of course, hand labor in this state for years, as late as 1960, as I know the commissioner knows, the majority of the cotton crop in this state was still picked by hand in 1960. And until well into the 70s and 80s, tobacco was still picked by hand. Now that's all done by machine.
But our vegetables and fruits and vegetables will, for the most part, always be a hand-picked crop. And again, it has to do with, as Nat referenced, the quality that and the value of the crop you're harvesting as to how much you're going to invest in it. And if hand-picked cropping is the best way to harvest that quality, you're going to invest in it. South Carolina's a great user of the guest worker programs for agriculture, and I see that hemp will be another alternative or another use of that. One of our biggest challenges for all this to be successful is to have quality processors come to South Carolina, work with our farmers like Nat and others to contract with growing and a value and an understanding of what their revenues will be for that crop based on their arrangements. So again, part of our responsibilities in the department is to vet those processors who want to come to South Carolina and license them as well to again, so that our farmers are not aligned with someone that may not be able to come through with what they promise.
Mm-hmm. Again, I say in terms of agricultural history, when cotton began to boom, before individuals had their own gin, you had a gin, and then later, of course, in the 20th century, when we were producing 1.6 million bales a year, Mr. Commissioner, you know, you had a huge gin in town. People quit having their own gin. So the crop is transportable. I mean, once you've got your seed, if you're not pressing your oil yourself, you could...
You dry the hand harvest, the biomass, you dry it. Some of our tobacco farmers used old tobacco barns to dry it down. You take it to the processor and they begin the extraction process. And that provides some jobs based on the size of the processor's operation. So we want those jobs in South Carolina. We want that value added here rather than shipping our biomass off to North Carolina, to Kentucky, or somewhere else.
Well, I guess I can't help but think of all of those huge tobacco warehouses in the PD that are now standing vacant. That might one of them might become a processing plant, and that's
breathe some new life into them.
Yeah,
it could. It has that potential.
Yeah. Well, Nat, you've been smiling throughout this whole program. You really think this is, I mean, as a farmer, and particularly somebody who's dealt with reintroducing wonderful crops, you think this really is the wave of the future for our state, in terms of agriculture?
I would never put that much burden onto one plant. Is it the way of the future? I think it's definitely the way of the near future. This is one of the most highest potential crops being reintroduced to the agricultural landscape with such a useful past. I don't know of any other crop on the horizon that has the potential that hemp does, not just for South Carolina farmers, but for the United States. And we're just beginning to explore all of its uses, just scratching the surface. It's a total rediscovery. And, you know, for me as an heirloom farmer, as a heritage crop farmer, that I can have some part to play in its repatriation, and that these genetics are going to be something that are useful to my kids and grandkids. You know, our watermelon wasn't an heirloom 180 years ago. It is now. I'd love to say, you know, that my kids to look back and know that our family had something to do with it 180 years from now.
Okay. All right. And Hugh, in terms of the other crops we now traditionally have, we have soybeans, we have corn, we have cotton. Hmm. How much acreage do we have in cotton now, approximately?
We'll range from year to year, but about 300,000.
Okay. And, you know, people say, well, that's not a lot. In 1980s, we were down to about 50,000 acres of cotton in this state. People don't realize how cotton has made a comeback.
It has. The soybeans, corn, cotton, peanuts are all world crops. And the South Carolina farmer competes with farmers in Brazil. They compete for markets, and not only in this country, but in the case of our cotton, international markets. So when we can focus on a crop that may have more localized marketing, but once you process hemp, it can go anywhere in the world. But if, in fact, like fruits and vegetables that have a market is the East Coast, when we can separate ourselves from a worldwide market impact, I think our chances improve. And again, with hemp, it fits into that category. In my time, I have seen, I'll call them savior crops, come along and find a lot of difficulties either in harvest or growing, whatnot. So we don't want to just say, here's our savior crop, and it's called hemp. We want to learn about this crop, its challenges, its opportunities. Again, this next few years will be pretty interesting in learning about it.
Our curiosity, what were some of the savior crops? Tongue oil?
Well, a few years back.
That was way before your time.
Flax has come and gone a few times in South Carolina. It's a fiber alternative. We've had fast-growing trees that were to be for fiber and paper much quicker. We've had, had one that was for asthma. I can't even remember the name of the crop. It was down in my part of the world in Orangeburg County. We've had others like that have come along. The oil, switchgrass, you know, mm-hmm. that never really took off when the gasoline markets receded. So again, we just don't want to look at it as a panacea to all of our ills. We want to look at it in the right way to see what is its potential, what does it take to realize it, and again, how do we separate South Carolina from the pack?
All right. Well, this whole process of what you're doing, putting it into historical context, I can think of lots of ways we could go, but darn it, Alfred's giving me the wind-up signal. So, Nat, I want to start with you. Are there any last words you'd like to have for our listeners before we sign off today?
You know, I would like to say this is a crop that's not just for a few farmers to get involved with, 160, 180. This is a crop that can bring new life and new excitement to the agricultural landscape and give farmers another on a grand scale, not just 160, 180 farmers, but you know, there's 20,000 farms in South Carolina. The potential for this crop to impact the lives of many, many, many farmers. This is that crop that I want folks to understand and see its potential and get excited about.
All right, Commissioner.
Well, let me say this. You know, from the office I've had the privilege of occupying for a few years now, I continue to be impressed with our farmers, not only in their resilience through some of the weather challenges we've had in the last 3-4 years, but now proud of those who are saying, okay, I'm willing to step out of my comfort zone with a crop called hemp. or whatever the next one might be. And again, knowing that they're looking at crops that require thousands of dollars per acre in investment and not hundreds, again, it just gives me a lot of comfort in serving our farmers and serving the state as commissioner to see our farmers who are willing to take those risks on behalf of the future of their farming operation, and again, on behalf of this industry that's so important in South Carolina.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and Commissioner Hugh Weathers and Heritage farmer Nat Bradford, thank you both so much today for being on the Journal.
It's been a privilege.
My pleasure.
This is Walter Edgar, and I hope you enjoyed today's Journal. Sometimes people say history repeats itself, and maybe yes, maybe no. In the 18th century, South Carolina farmers were paid a bounty, some of them, for growing hemp for industrial purposes. And now, we know in the 21st century, there are many uses for hemp, hemp fiber, as well as the better-known medicinal uses of hemp. And it has been reintroduced into South Carolina very carefully through the State Department of Agriculture, with the full support of the governor and the General Assembly. And they're looking not for a savior crop, but for a sustainable crop that will help farmers of all sizes be more competitive in today's world market. This is Walter Edgar. Join me next week for more of The Journal.
Walter Edgar's Journal is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. The producer and engineer is Alfred Turner. Production of this program is made possible in part by listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina.
The views and opinions expressed on Walter Edgar's Journal are not necessarily those of South Carolina Public Radio.